Hello, I'm Joe Ellis, and welcome to episode 20 of Pittodrie PS, the predominantly Dons-based podcast featuring not just the Dons first team, but a look across the age groups and genders at the club. And we focus on the respective progress of Cove and Peterhead too, as well as the Northeast local representatives in the Highland League and juniors. And not just football, but any sport making headlines in the Northeast of Scotland or featuring someone from the Northeast of Scotland. Joining me for this journey, as always, Dave McDermott and Andrew Shiney. So here we are recording this episode on the morning of Tuesday, 21st December. And in terms of games, we're in kind of exactly the same position as we were when we recorded this time last week, looking ahead to Hibs. But this time out, they've played in the League Cup final. What did you make of Hibs in that match, Andrew?
To be honest, I haven't seen the full game or even the highlights. All I've seen is the goals. it sounds very much like Celtic. You know, the DNA of Celtic contains this desire to win trophies, this way of managing to win a game where perhaps things aren't going as well as they should be for you. And they did enough to win that cup final. So Ange Postecoglou's reign starts with a trophy. So he's one out of one. He's alongside Steven Gerrard now in terms of trophies won in Scotland. And, you know, it's unfortunate for Hibs. They took the lead, and again, it looked like it was Celtic's inability to deal with a set-piece situation. Paul Hanlon just wanted it more than Carl Starfelt. Got the header on target, it went in. But then, like St Mirren did against Aberdeen a couple of weeks ago, Hibs committed the cardinal sin of not keeping it tight for the next 10, 15 minutes. In fact, I think somebody said it was 71 seconds from the time that Hanlon's header crossed the line to the time that Kyogo Furuhashi's equaliser had gone in. So they didn't have time to settle on it at all. That put Celtic right back into the game again. It's a very good finish, the second goal from Furuhashi. Complaints from Hibs about they were trying to make a substitution and the game should have been stopped. Well, you play to the whistle. And again, I suppose it's been another of those occasions where the referee has been very much in the spotlight. John Beaton's inconsistencies shown to the world once again. And it's high time VAR was brought into Scottish football. But then again, you see what happened down south over the weekend. They've got VAR. They still can't get decisions right.
Yeah.
How did Harry Kane stay in the park after that horrific challenge in Andy Robertson?
Don't know.
Goodness only knows.
England captain.
Exactly. And that is what's going to happen up here. It's going to be the same group of referees who are making the mistakes on the field just now, who will be sitting in a studio somewhere in Glasgow probably, looking at VAR and going, Rangers, aye, penalty. but ref, it was a corner kick at Dens Park, a Dundee derby that we were asking you about. No, penalty to Rangers.
the problem with Hibs of late, and the frustrating thing for their fans, I guess, is that Hibs blows so hot and cold, you can't ever say the game before will be indicative of what's to come in the next one, can you, Dave?
No, you can't. I mean, Celtic, to be fair, I did watch the game, and Celtic deserved it because they were the best team throughout the first half. Hibs didn't get anywhere near like the what we expect from them. They were a bit better in the second half. They went ahead. I thought it was actually less than 71 seconds, Andrew. I thought it was more like 20 seconds because I'd just gone to switch on the kettle and look, which is about 10 yards away from me, and when I came back, Celtic had scored.
Ah, but you take ages to travel any distance nowadays, don't you?
This is very true. Very, very personal, Andrew, but... but again, Hanlon should have scored in stoppage time. He missed a sitter to take it into extra time, but Hibs, they do blow hot and cold. Paul McGinn, he's going to get it for calling John Beaton inept, which is probably fairly tame compared to what most Hibs fans were calling him on Sunday afternoon. But with Hibs, who knows what we'll get tomorrow night, because it's how they react. They've got the new manager. Will it be a new manager bounce? Is it too soon for that?
Well, these are questions I'm about to ask you in the next couple of minutes. That League Cup final, Andrew, mentally, how do you think it will affect him? I mean, I remember when we won the League Cup, and the next game we came out, and you know, as you know, we've been celebrating a fair bit, and we didn't turn up for the next game. The fact that they feel mentally aggrieved that things have gone against them, do you think there'll be any kind of backlash?
I think it'll be more physically that they'll be affected, because there's not that adrenaline rush of having won the trophy to take you through. And they will have put a lot into that second half, particularly the latter part where they were chasing an equaliser. And mentally, they'll be down because this was a chance to make up for what has been a pretty poor run of form, the League Cup semi-final apart. I think what will be more interesting is to see how Sean Maloney. Go on, Dave, have a go.
Yeah. Old age again.
Yes. I can't believe you got the Japanese player's name out twice. Yeah. And you can't get Sean Maloney.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what changes the new manager makes, both tactically and in terms of personnel, because I'm sure he will want to put his stamp on things. But he's only been in the door 5 minutes. Yesterday was spent meeting the media, meeting everybody at Hibs training ground. So he's not going to have spent very much time in the training ground prior to this game against Aberdeen. So I think mentally they'll be a bit down, and it's going to be quite hard to pick them up. It will be interesting to see how many Hibs fans go along to the game, because they have gradually been drifting away as the form has gone. You know, they were getting 17, 18,000. It's down to about 14, 11, 12, sort of these kind of numbers. And again, I think now Hibs are reporting their crowds in terms of numbers of tickets sold and then numbers of clicks through the turnstiles. And there's often quite a big disparity between these figures. I think it's going to be a tough one for Hibs to pick themselves up from.
Mm. Yeah, incidentally, just as an aside, Furuhashi also sounds like the commentator on BBC Radio Alba when someone misses a sitter. Oh, Furuhashi! of course, the other difference, as you mentioned there, is one that hadn't happened when we recorded this time last week. They've got that new manager, the former Sean Maloney. In essence, an American-based businessman bringing in an untried rookie manager. Can't help but think Hibs have done an Aberdeen here, Dave.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is. I think it's a bold appointment. It is a bit left field, but, you know, Andrew and I both know Sean, and he is a very good lad. He's a very likeable guy, but he's also pretty driven. You don't get to be assistant to the world number one country without having something about you. So it is a risk, but I think it'll be a welcome addition to Scottish football after tomorrow night, obviously. It's a good appointment, I think, personally, but only time will tell.
He's probably sitting there thinking, thank goodness I waited on for that Hibs job. I was going for the Fort William one, but I lost out to the other Belgian guy. Only just at the door. Can a new manager bounce take effect that quickly, Andrew?
It does sometimes. Other times it takes a long, long time for the effects of new manager. I just hope that he's given time, because Hibs have operated a pretty much a revolving door policy for their managers. I think it's a yellow post-it sticker that gets stuck in the door with the name of the manager, rather than spend money for a sign to stick on there, because they've gone through so many over the last decade or so. He will bring fresh ideas. He's worked with Roberto Martinez for 3 years with Belgium. Now, obviously, he doesn't have the same quality of player at Hibernian as he's had with Belgium, but he's a pretty shrewd cookie, Sean Maloney. You could see what he was like as a player. Technically very gifted, you know, a little guy, but he didn't look like a little guy when he was in a football pitch. He could stand up to the big guys without any bother at all. Very skillful. And I've got to say, it's good to see a former Colts Academy pupil in the managerial ranks now, because he is Northeast based, or that's where he was brought up. Dave's known him through tennis for many, many years. We've all seen him out on the pitch, and he's a nice guy, and we wish him every success after tomorrow night and apart from when he comes up to Pittodrie.
Did he play tennis a lot as well, Dave? Was he one of those kids that was just...
Northeast Schools champion for a few years and could have, you know, he was one of the ones that was talked about, could make the step up professionally. I think he chose the right career and because we know how difficult it is to make it in professional tennis, but he was a great player as a kid. Yeah, and one of these annoying people that could just turn his hand to whatever sport and
Imperial Festival.
Yeah, me too.
Andy Murray was cheering for him now, at least, as opposed to playing against him. So let's get a reminder of what might have happened for the Dons in the week. Anything at all?
I think what's happened is, well, obviously they've got to make a change tomorrow night because Ross McCrory is suspended.
Yeah.
So I think Declan Gallagher will be the guy who comes in because he's been sitting in the bench the last couple of weeks, obviously fit enough to play. Jack McKenzie is fit enough to play. I have a little sneaking suspicion that Calvin Ramsey may come back into the fray tomorrow night. There have been little hints on Twitter from the player himself, showing pictures of himself back in training, albeit that it's just a picture of Calvin with no one around him. So you don't know, is that just Calvin out in the afternoon doing a run himself that he's
in his back garden,
a picture
yeah.
of? Possibly. From what we've heard from Stephen Glass in recent weeks, Calvin was edging ever closer to being fit again. So if we can get him for this run of four games between now and the winter break, that would be a big boost for Aberdeen, without any question. But I don't foresee there being too many changes to the side. The last three games that we've won, it's been the same starting 11 every time. Unfortunately, McCrory's suspension forces the change on Stephen Glass, but I think that will be the only change in the starting 11 tomorrow night.
Okay, and will we get away with it is how I'll phrase this question, Dave, with changing, I mean, Ross McCrory having come out, will we get away with that? I think he's been playing pretty well. Declan Gallagher hasn't been in the team for some time. Will that show?
It may. You certainly hope not, but I think the important thing is that David Bates is now playing to a level we were hoping he would when he signed. So it shouldn't make too much difference. And you've got to remember, last time Declan Gallagher was playing in the first team, the confidence levels were not where they will be for the game tomorrow night. So, you know, confidence is such a huge thing in football. And we're in the... And, you know, in the middle of a good run that we don't want to be spoiled.
By the way, speaking of people coming back to contention for defensive berths, has anyone watched part one of The Road to Recovery on Red TV featuring Andy Considine?
Yes, I have watched it, and it's good to see the progress that Andrew's making. I mean, we know what kind of character he is. And as he said, he knows what it's like to come back from a bad injury. He got a horrific leg break down at Dens Park, ironically, courtesy of Declan Gallagher. You know, it's no surprise to see how fit-looking he is. He was off the crutches as quickly as he possibly could be. He's back doing all the training that he can. I think Adam Stokes is probably having to rein him back rather than push him forward. Good to see that Andrew's on the road to recovery because he's been missed. There's no question at all about that.
It's a good wee documentary, actually. It's only, I mean, you'll fit it into a lunch break as well. Part one's only 12 minutes long, but it's worth watching just to, if you've never seen round the likes of Cormac Park either, you get a little bit of a look round there. But there's a point in it, I won't put in too many spoilers, there's a point in it where Andy, having spotted a tweet about himself from someone that he's no idea who this person is, but a really disparaging tweet, he now has saved this tweet and it's the screensaver on his phone. So every time he picks up his phone, it's the first thing he sees, and he's using it as fuel, as motivation to get back to being in the first team again and getting on a decent run, which I admire. Okay, let's get a reminder of the score predictors from last week ahead of the Hibs game. Hibs versus Aberdeen tomorrow night. Dave?
2-1 Aberdeen. Going to be tight.
And Andrew?
See it being like the St Johnston game, 1-0 to the Dons. Hibs not firing in all cylinders up top in particular. Martin Boyle, his goals seem to have dried up since the League Cup final. League Cup semi-final, I should say. Kevin Nisbet hasn't scored the number of goals that you'd expect. And I think we've got enough going forward, we might just sneak it.
Okay. On to Cove Rangers, still fighting and thriving on all fronts with a Scottish Cup fixture against Hibs to look forward to, as well as an SPFL Trust Trophy semi-final in March versus the team they knocked out of the Scottish Cup before Hibs, Queen of the South. All that, and they were 3 points clear at the top of League One as they went into last weekend's fixture against sixth place Alloa at Balmoral Stadium. The fog came down, but thankfully didn't snuff the game out entirely, as it did a few other places. The match ended in another 3-0 win for Cove, their favourite scoreline of late. Goals from Jamie Masson, a Rory McAllister penalty, and Mitch Meganson as he bandwagon continues rolling into the festive season. Cove now 5 points clear at the top. Next up, a Boxing Day home tie versus East Fife. Just keep on keeping on, the advice for Cove at this stage, Dave.
Absolutely. They were, again, pretty clinical on Saturday, although, as Andrew will confirm, at 2 o'clock, you really thought there's no way this game is going ahead. But fair play to the officials. They allowed extra time. Keith Moorhouse was on the phone to the league and we got up until 3:30 to make a final decision. As it happened, the fog lifted enough before 3 o'clock, although there was a couple of times during the game where we thought it was coming back again. It never quite went away. So, but another, they're just very ruthless at the moment, Cove. And the difference between them and the other teams in that league, I think, you know, whereas Clyde have got David Goodwillie, who's a game changer. Cove have about 5 or 6 players who can turn a game, and that's been shown time and time again recently. The only downside was the early injury to one of these players that can be a game turner, Ian Vigers, after a pretty brutal tackle. But fingers crossed that he's out short term, not long term, and Shea will be back after his suspension at the weekend for these 5 games. So it's important. East Fife, you know, they've got Stevie Crawford in charge now, another ex-Don, but, you know, they're at home, it's becoming a fortress, Balmoral, as it was before. So, fingers crossed, they can keep it going.
Yeah, I think I saw the highlights of the Meganson goal, and you can barely see that in the fog, but still better than the Falkirk one. I don't know if you saw that. It was Falkirk TV's highlights of the day. And all it is fog. That's it. It's just a blanket of fog, and it lasts for like 3 seconds, and the game's called off.
It's unfortunate, John. I mean, I was going to say, I was at the game on Saturday, and yeah. I can just echo everything that Dave said. Cove, hugely impressive. I thought Alloa were neat and tidy, but lacked any sort of cutting edge. But Cove have got match winners all over the place. And they score good goals. They play good football. They're pretty relentless. They give nothing at all away at the back. They're very solid. And, you know, somebody was joking that, you know, Cove and Aberdeen will meet next season in the Championship. but Cove will be in the Championship next season. I'm quite sure of that, the way things are going, because they are a very, very impressive unit. And they've got great strength and depth as well.
I heard someone asking an interesting question at the weekend, actually, that if they do go up, which, I mean, you know, it's looking good at this stage, will they go full-time, Dave? You're a little bit closer to that. Any ideas?
I think they will go full-time, but I don't think all the players will go full-time. The likes of Ian Vigers, who's already looking for, I mean, I spoke to him about this earlier in the season, and he's already looking for his, you know, what life after football. So it would be a kind of hybrid situation where some of the players are full-time, but you've got others that are part-time, still doing jobs as well. Like Mitch Meganson, I wouldn't think Mitch would be keen to go back to full-time football, but I think as a club, if they get up to the Championship, I think they will go full-time. I think that's always been the plan. And by the way, the fog was so bad that I actually thought it was Blair Yule that scored Mitch's goal. I was going to him and commentary. So we should have been a rarity as well.
I seem to remember, is Ronnie McAllister, is he not a plumber? And at one point, there was talk of interest from Pittodrie, and the truth of it was he reckoned he'd make more money staying on as a plumber and being at Peterhead. So, you know, it's that sort of thing that you have to consider at that stage, isn't it? You know, long time retired, as they say.
Well, the thing is, they've got to be looking to the future. And if they've got a solid business behind them and able to play football just now, let's face it, Rory McAllister, Mitch Meganson, Ian Vigers, they're in the later stages of their careers. It's different for an 18-year-old. He'll want want to go full time, because he'll want to devote everything to football in the hope that he moves from Cove and moves in an upward trajectory. I think Cove will be a sort of semi full time, or some players will be full time, some will be part time. But the whole ethos of the club is geared towards being full time and extremely professional, which they are at the moment, to be perfectly honest.
Then again, you know, who's at the top of the Championship right now? It's Arbroath, isn't it?
Arbroath, yep, absolutely.
We're a part-time team.
Yeah, and indeed. I mean, Arbroath are a huge success story.
Yeah.
And that was with Rab Douglas in charge of them on Saturday. Rab Douglas and the lad Young, because the two Campbell brothers had COVID.
Yeah.
Rab Douglas, who's about 62 or something like that now, he was the sub goalkeeper. Arbroath are doing a fantastic job there in the Championship. I don't know whether they'll manage to keep it going for a whole season. It would be a real fairy tale,
wouldn't it,
if that were to happen. But speaking about Cove, I mean, they're doing fantastic things there at Balmoral. And more power to them.
Yeah, Peterhead started the weekend in eighth spot in League One, requiring to start taking points from those teams around them to really make an impact and get out of that part of the table. In their immediate path at the time, the team just below them in the league, Dumbarton, the Blue Toon, the visiting team on this occasion, had to come from behind twice to grab a valuable win and take all 3 points back home with them. Goals from Josh Mulligan and a brace from Russell McLean, cancelling out the earlier work from Dumbarton's Andy Gagan and Conor Duffy. That win, by the way, propelling Peterhead into the top half of the table, believe it or not, with another match only a day away when they travel to second place at Montrose tomorrow night. It's amazing what a win can do in terms of perspective, isn't it, Andrew?
Absolutely. I mean, as you see, all of a sudden, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, we were saying, you know, Peterhead are going to have to get some points on the board because they're in danger of being sucked right down to the bottom. Now they're in the top half of the table. But as we've said, virtually ad infinitum in this podcast, that league is so tight.
Yeah.
Now it is starting to stretch a bit. Cove are now 5 points clear at the top. But then everybody else in the mix is beating everybody else. So, Peterhead are doing well. And that was a good win because I was down at Dumbarton with Aberdeen in the Scottish Cup last year. And albeit there's been a few changes in personnel and management down there, it's a difficult place to go and get a victory. And that's a great win for Peterhead. Coming from behind twice, as you said, it shows the mental fortitude that they've got. And Jim McAnally will be very pleased with the way things are going there. They need to start making Balmoor more of a fortress, because they've dropped a few points there when you expected them to win.
Yeah.
But if you can pick up threes away from home on a regular basis, you're in good shape.
For the Highland League teams, Brechin beat Devon Vale 4-0. Clach played Wick Academy, going down 3-2 at home. Huntly travelled to play Lossie and secured a 4-1 victory. Down County welcomed Rothes. That one ended 3-2 for the home side. Brora against Fraserburgh. Fort William v Fermartin United. Strathspey Thistle Forest. Turriff United versus Inverurie Locos, and Keith against Bucky Jags. The majority, really, were all postponed, and it's the same story with the juniors, Dave.
They made this decision, the committee, on Friday, just to cancel. If there was only going to be last weekend, and then it was a break till late to January anyway. So in view of the Omicron numbers rising and with teams travelling all over the area, they felt so close to Christmas, they didn't want to spoil the players. Families, Christmas, just took the decision to cancel. And a sensible one, I think, as well in the circumstances. But although it is disappointing, and it's obviously a bit worrying, you know, where we're going to be this time next week when we speak.
Well, yeah, let's actually very quickly take a look at that, because I mean, I don't know what your own feelings are, but I get the feeling that we might get just the other side of Christmas, and I hope the Boxing Day match. But I'm not convinced that we'll get to the 29th in the Rangers game. What do you think, Andrew?
Very difficult to second guess what's happening. I mean, things are changing almost daily. There was an edict came out from the JRG, was it the Joint Response Group, to first of all to the Premiership clubs, saying you've got to test every day. And now it's come out to all the senior clubs in Scotland that they've got to test every day. I mean, personally do a lateral flow test every day and send my result to the football club to let them see that, I'm okay to be going to games, etc. It's a difficult one because you hear, you know, Jason Leach, I think it was, said, you know, when there was talk about this past weekend, 50,000 at Ibrox on Saturday, 50,000 at Hampden on Sunday. And he said, well, look, it's cold weather, it's outdoors. That's the type of conditions that the virus doesn't like. It doesn't transmit anything like as freely there. I think it's up to everyone to take every possible precaution. You know, wear your face mask when you're on public transport, but take a lateral flow test every day and just check that you're okay, because the last thing you want is, you know, you're checking that you're okay, but then somebody standing next to you for however long or, you know, passes it on to you and you're pinged as a close contact, and that's your Christmas ruined, not just for you, but for your family. So I think it's, you're relying on people's common sense. Now, that's not a thing that is immediately prevalent in Scottish football, is it?
Or Downing Street.
Or Downing Street, indeed.
Jason Cummings.
Well, absolutely. You know, I think everybody's got to take responsibility and you know, not just look after themselves, but look after others. But that's been the story throughout this entire pandemic. And unfortunately, too many people haven't heeded the warnings, taken the advice on board. And we are where we are. But I have a sneaking suspicion that they'll try desperately to get all the games played through to the winter break. And then, yeah, you know, you've got a couple of weeks. And it may be that the lower league clubs suffer for 2 weeks because their fixtures are called off or they have to play behind closed doors. I'm not really sure, but I think...
The thing is, weather usually takes care of that anyway, doesn't it?
It does to a large extent. I mean, and we're hearing all about there's going to be snow bombs over Scotland and all this sort of thing, but we've heard that before. Next thing we'll be seeing is it's going to be a barbecue Christmas. It's going to be 4 degrees. Yeah. It's changing. It's such a fluid situation. It's changing all the time. And when you get different governments in different parts of the country that appear to be approaching it from different angles, you know, the mixed messaging is doing nothing to help the situation.
Okay, a couple of things here. One, I always love when, you know, someone like Sky News tries to blow something up and they say, coming today, thunder snow bomb. And in Scotland, we call it Wednesday. And also, the idea of getting through to the winter shutdown is an intriguing one. Do you think it might help, Dave, if we change the kiosks to serving cheese and non-alcohol wine?
possibly. Yeah.
Just say it's a group, you know, it's a group meeting and everyone there is working. There are no laptops. Everyone's in a suit. It's fine.
Absolutely. No, mixed messages. Start at the top and go all the way down. But no, I think certainly, you know, speaking to the guys at Cove at the weekend, they are really concerned that we're away to hit exactly the same problems again. And of course, a club like Cove who rely on income, you know, the corporate hospitality is sold out all season. And is an income stream that they lost for a year and a half. And, you know, to lose it again would just be such a body blow, not just to Cove, obviously, but to every club that's in a similar situation. But I do think if the numbers keep on going the way they are going, League of Wales have already announced this morning that no fans now for the next while for matches. And we know what it's like. You know, we've all been to games with no fans, and it's just absolutely so unique compared to what it should be like. But yeah. And of course, the weekend games, it's the travelling to and from the games in cars and buses and trains that are going to be the main problem cause you would expect. So we'll just have to wait and see. But as Andrew said, it's such a fluid situation. Yeah. It's not even changing daily, it's changing during days.
Absolutely. So the best thing that we can advise is that if you are locked down, then you take advantage of online listening and get into a new podcast. Ooh. Nothing better than Red Rewind. Back for season two, the guys, this is how I described it last week. I think it's fairly accurate. The guys catch up with people connected with Aberdeen FC from over the years, and they get them to share their Don story. Now, where are we with season two, Dave?
Willie Garner, it was like technical problems. Michael, my son, is our editor, and he's just moved house, and the Wi-Fi was delayed, so and his studio facilities, so nothing until yesterday. So Willie Garner was meant to be out yesterday, but I spoke to Willie at the weekend. He was at Cove and told him it was delayed till Thursday. And then We're back with Stuart Duff next Monday, followed by, keep me right here, Andrew, Jim White, Bobby Clark, Craig Brown, Stuart McKimmy on subsequent Mondays. But of course, you can already get Series 1 in its entirety just by searching for the Red Rewind podcast. And it was certainly very joyful for Andrew and myself making it, and hopefully those who haven't listened or those who have listened are enjoying listening to it as well. But some great stories. And Stuart Duff, of course, is next Monday, and he's the most modern person in Series 2.
I would guess the Craig Brown podcast episode in itself could probably take you through the shutdown, couldn't it?
It almost did.
We started it in, what was it, May 2019?
Yeah.
And finished it just a week ago.
Normally they're about between 45 minutes and an hour.
Yes.
Yeah. It's comfortably over the hour.
That's the edited version.
Yeah. Let me put this out there. Craig is always fascinating and entertaining to listen to. I've interviewed him on several occasions, and I have yet to ask a question. He's just started. He's just gone, and that's it. And then he assumes that when you actually wind up, he looks almost a little bit offended. You're not going to ask me about such and such?
Well, Bobby Clark is another one that can talk for his country, and fantastic memory. But Andrew and I, after we'd recorded it, we realised not once did Bobby actually finish a sentence. We had to interrupt every single question. It would still have been speaking the first answer now if it's let him.
You know, there are people listening to this, and let's not forget this, there are people listening to this podcast just now who genuinely would give their right arm to get in a room with these guys and just have a chat.
Absolutely. I mean, we are enormously privileged to be able to chat to these guys. I mean, Craig Brown and Bobby Clark, Jim White, take the three of them. They've got something like 200 plus years experience in Scottish football between them. It's fantastic. I mean, Jim White takes you from the Tommy Pearson era at Pittodrie. Now, I had never heard of football in Tommy Pearson as a kid. I was only just alive when he was starting there. And it's absolutely fascinating. But as I say, it's a huge privilege for us to be able to chat to these guys. And we just hope that, you know, the little prompts that we give them between their answers make it entertaining for everybody, because for us, it's absolutely, it's a labour of love.
Yeah, okay. That's Red Rewind. You'll find that on, Apple, Spotify, anywhere you look, or on Facebook, look for Red Rewind Podcast. You'll get that way as well. That is pretty much it for episode 20 of Pittodrie PS. We aim to publish every week on a Tuesday if we can, always looking back to the Don's previous fixtures and ahead to the next. Please remember to follow us on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you could rate and review us, tell us what you think of the show as well. We'd be very grateful. Thanks for checking out Pittodrie PS. I suppose we should say Merry Christmas at this point, because next time we record, it'll be after that.
Merry Christmas, have a great guys. Christmas, and to you, John and Dave.
Yeah, you too, guys.
And to everyone listening.
Yep, thanks for that. And see you next time.